This is Exploring the Marketplace Podcast. I'm Sean Bowles.
And I'm Bob Hassan. And together, we're inviting you into conversation about what God is doing with entrepreneurs, influencers, and everyday career fields.
Get a fresh perspective with our commentary and stay for the main chorus from our handpicked guests who are vulnerable, transparent, and sharing how their faith affects their career in powerful ways.
If a picture's worth a thousand words, then their life story is worth a thousand sermons. Here we go. Welcome to Exploring the Marketplace. I'm Bob Hassan with my friend Sean Bowles. Sean, what are we doing on the show today?
Well, the first thing we're going to do is talk about how to get a rhythm of rest into your career habits and into your life habits, because one of the things we're finding out is that people who are going after entrepreneurship and business ownership are burned out. It's statistically terrible right now for people who are driven in their career. We're watching people work too hard. And so we're going to be talking about that and like how even, you know, it's obviously a biblical commandment to rest, and Christians are doing a terrible job, especially in North America. North America is the worst offender of this. So if you're from there, it's going to really help you. But Asian countries, North America, African countries, the only place that seems to get it right is possibly part of Europe. So how do we set a protocol for healthy rest and downtime? We're going to talk about that. Then we have an incredible guest today, Mike Thacker, who is an award-winning CEO and is a voice in the business world that's really helping people to blend business and purpose to create meaningful change. I think that's important, is that he's helping entrepreneurs and Christians to understand their role as a business owner. And you're going to want to hear his unique perspective on this, especially with the business that he started, which was the workspaces that you can go rent for, you know, a day at a time or a week at a time, whatever. And he's also done a lot of other things. It's one of his businesses.
Sean, what do you have for us on tap for our real topics?
Well, the research is in, and God's commandment to rest really does work. And it's proven psychologically and sociologically. Rest is the secret sauce. I mean, this is like, these are mainstream articles I read. I read one on Forbes. There's one on Medium in England. There's like so many different articles about this. But people who rest actually have more creativity and an enhanced work week. They actually work more with less hours of work in a work week if they do it right. As a matter of fact, many companies are going to four-day work weeks all over the world, which is shocking. They're offering more PTO. Some are offering unlimited days off as long as you get your work done, because productivity increases in many fields, not all fields, of course, but with many fields, when there's less hours instead of more hours. And we know that burnout and even sin are cultivated in environments where people just don't rest. I mean, where they don't actually know what rest looks like. So how do we get into the right rhythm of rest? And that's not going to disrupt all that God has for us to accomplish, but actually enhances it. And I think I said this one other time, because we've talked about this in different ways before in the past. But one of the times I was at a church service here locally in Dallas and at Mercy Culture, and the pastor, the female pastor, is a husband, wife, Shots. She said, you know, the reality for me is I had to learn how to rest because I was a workaholic. And I realized that if I gave God that one day for him to work, he got more done in that one day, or because of that one day, than I got in the whole rest of the week. Like, he just did so much. I think there's a reality that God does things in those rhythm of rest that we couldn't do by ourselves, with favor and connecting us and birthing creativity inside of us and allowing us to process and spiritually have awareness of the rest of our life. And I think it's really important.
I when you bring this up, I think about, you know, stewardship. And when we talk about that stewardship, most of the time we think about finances, you know, being good stewards. But when you talk about being good stewards of our time, that really shakes people up, because as we talk about rest, there's something in, you know, not only our culture, but in cultures around the world, where production is the number one thing to focus on. And if you're not being productive, then nothing's going to happen.
You're not valuable, yeah.
Yeah, and in a lot of industries, as they go to four-day work weeks, they're finding, you know, people's mental health increases, productivity increases. And it seems in the human view, it seems like, how could that be? But if we look at God created the world in 6 days and then rested, like, he's telling us something that is important that a lot of us don't listen to, or we have to think about it constantly and not let it get out of hand.
Well, I think for me, part of how I kind of come back into a place of advancement, when I know there's like not just business as normal, is when, you know, I all of a sudden take some time away with Sheree and the girls, or where I'm just like all of a sudden having an incredible weekend that's completely outside of the grid of what I'm working on in my spiritual or business purpose. And I think there is those moments where, you know, you study in therapy that if you want to heal trauma, you have to do something completely opposite of what you normally do. And so that part of your brain that's normally in trauma rests, and then you're doing something else. So it's not that you go into a place of inactivity. You actually can do something else. So they'll tell you, go to the beach or go golfing or do something, a hobby you've never done before. Start a class, a cooking class, something that doesn't make you feel like you're working, but is having fun. And people get healed with trauma faster. It's from learning another language than they do from just like inactivity, watching TV. And so I think it's the same with rest. Like God's wired us to rest in Him and then rest in each other, especially relationally. And it actually builds the circuitry inside to receive the next message, the next download from God. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think we think it that way. I think that we dishonor rest because we think it's going to take away from what we're really called to. And I think that's because our identity is doing something for God or for our purpose instead of with God. You know, I think it's so important that we change that.
Right. And like, I think about when we've talked about this a lot, but there's rest cycles, like daily rest, weekly rest, monthly, quarterly, annual rest. And for me, during the week, one of the ways that I rest, even though this sounds funny, is that I exercise.
Yeah.
I like cardio exercise. It gives my mind a place to rest and to check out of all the things that are happening.
Self-care is one of the top ways to rest. That's like proven.
So, I mean, I'm agreeing with you. And obviously there's time away with your wife or your husband, time away on vacations. There's just different things. And a lot of us are in businesses or industries or work cycles where we push for a big project and the project completes and we have to make sure to take care of ourselves and say, okay, I've just been pushing for 6 months or 9 months or a year. Yeah. It's time for rest.
Totally. Well, I mean, our in production, like for media and production stuff, when I get on a series, like I did one not too long ago, and it was like 2 weeks, I was out completely. My family didn't see me, mm-hmm. but you can't live that way as a lifestyle. And there's some people who will be gone for 3 months. That's fine. But you can't do back to back to back to back because you're afraid you're not going to get another opportunity. And I remember a friend of ours, she was with her best friend, who's one of the top actresses in Hollywood, at one of the top paid Hollywood premieres for a woman in history. And her friend sits next to her, like right when they get to the premiere, and they look beautiful on the red carpet, the whole thing. And she whispers in her ear, she's smiling. She goes, what if I don't get another opportunity? What if nothing else comes? What if this is it? What if? And just is in total insecurity and fear and can't enjoy the night, because she's already striving to become greater for the next thing. And I remember when my friend told me the story and just was like, oh my gosh, can you believe this happened to her? Because it was real time. It wasn't like she was telling me this profound principle. I was like, oh my gosh, we do that. I do that as a Christian. Sometimes I'm like in something and I'm not even enjoying the fruit of it because I'm already on the next thing. And I'm insecure that maybe God won't recreate the next big thing as big as this one. If I'm, you know, whatever, it's just performance. And I think that really is, it disables rest. It disables the ability to go, breathe and just go, I look around and go, even if I want to allow this to change and I'm only halfway to where I want to be, where I'm at is good. And my right. family is good. And my wife is good. And if we can't take the huge vacations I'm dreaming of one day, we can go, you know, downtown Fort Worth and hang out. And like I think people rob themselves of the enjoyment of where they're at.
I think what you're talking about is gratefulness, like looking back at various periods, monthly, weekly, monthly, you know, quarterly, annually, and saying, look what God's done.
Yeah.
Look where we've come from. Look where we still have to go. It's amazing. But taking a time to rest and enjoy what God's done, even though God's got to do a lot more, I think this helps us to rest.
I'll tell you our rest rules, Bob, real fast, and you know these already, but our rest rules when we go away with friends or with each other, with my wife, we don't look at our phones the whole time unless we have to, like just for briefly. We don't talk about anything with ministry or business at all unless it's like a God miracle or something in our heart that we feel like God's showing us. Not about work we'll do or about the next book project or the next podcast, nothing like that. She won't talk to me about her gardening thing and like some of the projects she's working on. We'll just talk about like our life, our dreams, our aspirations, our kids, whatever. Mm-hmm. We don't do any feasibility for each other. So if we do tell each other a dream, we won't do any feasibility of like, how would that work? And why would that work? Mm-hmm. So like if we're talking about like a dream of the house project that we would love to do, we're not going to talk about how much money it costs and can we actually get there? We just let each other dream. Mm-hmm. And then we don't put pressure on each other to listen the entire time, like to just be verbal the entire time. But we actually make sure that there's nonverbal connect times too, where it's, we're doing an activity or we're just like hanging out, watching a movie or whatever. So that's not all, it's not work. It doesn't become work too. And so those are kind of our main rest rules.
Those are great rules. Like, I think, wow, I'm didn't take notes, but I'm going to listen to Exploring the Marketplace, and then I'll take notes once I'm listening to this episode.
I don't think I've ever said those rest rules to anybody else, but those are our rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. And it works for you guys. Well, if you're listening to this and you have great rest rules or you have some thoughts on rest, go to bowlsministries.com and ask Bob or Sean a question. And ask us a question or give us a comment, because we'd love to talk about it. And having said that, we do have a question of the week, Sean. And it's from the Bowls Ministries website. Nice. Let me read it. You ready?
Yep.
I work retail and I've tried to love my coworkers. However, it just seems conflicting because it doesn't feel like a calling, but just a job. How do I define my calling at my job?
I mean, the Bible's clear, love your neighbor. And there's a capacity, if you don't feel it, if it's not an emotional love, you still have a grace that's given to you from Jesus living inside of you to love someone. And loving doesn't mean a feeling, and it doesn't mean full, like supporting who they are and their dreams and everything else. And you're probably at a temporary stage in life, not a permanent stage in life. And so it's hard when you're just having to bloom where you're planted, when you're not liking where you're planted or the people you're planted with. But I've had times, whether it was in my destiny, like there was one time in my church when I was pastoring 6 years in, where almost all my favorite people moved to different states and moved on to different places, not because of us, just because of their careers and their lives. And also this new crop of people moved into town, and I didn't really want to love them right away. It wasn't because I didn't like them or anything, but I was like, I don't want to start over. And it's like being a glorified youth pastor. And I was like, I don't want to do this. And I don't even have capacity for this. And then I had to draw on, it's not about me. I'm going to draw on God. I can bloom where I'm planted right now with the people that I wouldn't normally even be chemistry attracted to hang out with, but I can still love them and choose them. And then God made another beautiful crop of team out of that, that my, you know, next pastors that I gave the church over to inherited. So I think that we psych ourselves out by trying to feel like there has to be this moment where everything's awesome, or it feels like, oh, shiny, you know, it doesn't have to feel like favor and shiny. Sometimes we just have to have character and just press through, press in and just choose.
Yeah, I think of the scripture of going to Jerusalem, to Judea and all the world. And everyone focuses on all the world.
Yeah.
And Jerusalem is basically a metaphor for where you are. And I love my coworkers, and it is a place where I get to go and get to know people, and they get to see me, the good parts of me, the bad parts of me. And I feel like it's a calling. And Sean, we have this podcast and vodcast called Exploring the Marketplace because we love the marketplace. It's a huge calling. 99% of us work out in the marketplace, and it's our calling. 1% work in the organized church. And so I love this question because people get tied up in the sacred versus the secular, like, you know, hey, at work, it's secular. No, the whole thing is your calling to like you just said, bloom where you're planted. I love this.
I'll say one more thing, which is, I think, because I love what you're saying. I think if you're looking at these people as they have, there's a level of real connection you could have, which is a quality of friendship, like your acquaintanceship friendship, but these aren't going to be necessarily your core life friends. So then you can look at it and go, okay, I'm not going to try and be known in every way by them, but how can I contribute in a way that is positive for them? And so going in as a servant, a hearted person, knowing that God will serve you for your core needs outside of this, maybe in your church or your group of Christian friends that God surrounds you with. And then you get to give in this environment where you don't really need anything from it relationally, but you get to give something to it. I think that's a really key moment for you. And it doesn't mean that they won't bless you and that they won't become real friends, but it just means that you're not needing something extra from them, and you're going to really contribute based on the obedience of love, not necessarily the feeling of love.
Oh, that's great. Well, Sean, who do we have on the show today?
Today, we have on Mike Thacker, who's an award-winning CEO, entrepreneur, and even author, who has a passion for blending business and purpose to create meaningful change, like I said in the top of the show. From co-founding an internet company in the UK to leading a $100 million sales team, wow, winning operations for billionaires, Mike's journey is marked by bold decisions and innovative thinking. But he's now based in Tennessee after nearly two decades in Texas, which part of his business is still in Houston. He was named one of Houston's most admired CEOs and is a two-time Guinness World Record participant, which hopefully we can ask him about that. Yeah. As the author of Mic Drop, he inspires entrepreneurs through powerful stories and practical insights. And I think we're going to get some of those today on the show.
Yep. Up next, Mike Thacker.
I want to invite you to come and grow in the prophetic and spiritual gifts, and you have to do this intentionally or you won't see the results you want. We have a powerful tool for you called the Spiritual Growth Mentoring Community. We do four-week live courses with amazing speakers, and we have a prophetic nurturing community as well. And one of my favorite things that we do is online activation and connect groups with our pastors, so you actually have equipping opportunities to grow that are real time. You get to practice what you learn in classes. On top of that, I get to be your monthly prophetic accelerator coach and teach you how to go on a journey in the prophetic that maybe you've never been on before. And if you have been, you're gonna get impartation. You get to ask your questions. You get real prayer. And the atmosphere that I said, I think is one of the best you can have when pursuing hearing God's voice. 2025 is gonna be our best year yet. Upcoming courses are all about how to grow deeper in the prophetic. We're gonna talk about breaking curses in with the demonic, going after words of knowledge. And we have teachers who are gonna give you the secrets of prayer. And we're gonna help you move forward in God and all that he has for you. We care about your spiritual growth. And I know you care about it too. So come join us.
Welcome back. We're here with Mike Thacker. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
Mike, I'm so interested in hearing your journey because you are from Manchester, but you're in Houston for a while now. You're in Tennessee. Like, tell us about this business journey you've gone on because it's been so diverse. I love how in your bio it says you're an adventurous entrepreneur. Because not many people, I mean, I think all entrepreneurs are adventurous, but not many people would put it on there because then you're promoting the fact that you go into dangerous territories. So talk about what you've been doing.
Yeah, so I grew up in the UK and my wife and I, we met when we were young, went to Bible college together, thought we'd do the ministry thing, but didn't kind of work out right from the get-go. So we both went into the marketplace and I did pretty well with a large IT reseller there and kind of worked my way up through the ranks over the years. And then one day we had an opportunity to come to America as youth pastors out in the south side of Houston. So that was back in 2001, and we did that for a couple of years. And then we went back to the UK and then woke up one day in 2006 and just said to my wife, you know what? What if God wasn't finished with us in America? Like, should we go back? And she said, no, absolutely not. We're not going back. We just had a baby. We're happy here. Family's here. But we came back and did the ministry thing for a few more years. And then that kind of morphed into the marketplace again, and we started to realize that maybe we could have more of an impact for the kingdom outside of professional or traditional ministry. And actually, you know, through business and entrepreneurship, that seemed to be where God's favor was more in our life as we looked at it over the years. So we thought, hey, we'll give it a shot. We'll go start a business and we'll start a nonprofit and we'll just fund a nonprofit from the business. And I don't need to play politics. I don't need to ask anybody for anything. And hopefully we can make a difference. So that's what we've been doing for the last 10 years. So I'm sitting in a work lodge in Houston right now, which is one of my co-working spaces, and that's what we've done.
Wow.
So you make it sound so easy. I'm sure there were no challenges. I'm sure you didn't have cash flow problems. I'm sure everything just fell right into place
because you're absolutely every day. Yeah.
Okay. talk to us about once you got back here, what it was like with a young child. And okay, so now you have some entrepreneurial ideas and you start building.
Yeah, so, you know, we came back from ministry again. And so we did that for a couple of years. And I think that's when we really realized we're just not built for that, you know, that environment. And so God was really quite gracious. I picked up a weekend gig at the Apple store. So I'm you know, working like a few days a weekend there while we're doing the ministry in the week. And I ended up meeting a guy, I sold him a computer, that was it. And it turns out he was the CEO of a security company that specialized in kidnap, ransom, and extortion, that kind of stuff. Okay. Really, really kind of unique.
Yeah.
And so long story short, we kind of built a friendship. I did some work for him as a contractor here and there. And then I went to work for him. So I worked for him for nearly 5 years. And that's where this idea came from for the workspace. And I think it was through that time that I really started to think differently about just kingdom things, about marketplace, about how this all fits together. Obviously, we still had young kids. but it was a great opportunity for me to learn and grow from somebody who'd been in business for a long time in this culture, because all of my business experience had been in the British culture. And then it was also a good opportunity for my wife and I to just flesh out those thoughts more around, you know, what could it look like if we try something different? You know, how risky would it be? You know, and those kind of things. So I think that really platformed as well then when God opened this door for us here to be able to get some space and, you know, and build this thing to be able to actually go out and do it. So, yeah.
Well, talk about actually what it is you're doing, I think, or, you know, what you built, because I think a lot of people are listening. They're trying to get to a place where they will say yes to God, or they'll step out, you know, and here you guys not only said yes to God and stepped out, you went to a new country and where it is different. You even mentioned how different business was here, and you're doing some things that aren't the usual, especially for somebody with a traditional pastoral degree. So talk about that.
Yeah. So I think when we had the idea here, we thought the idea was great, right? I wanted to go somewhere to work that wasn't home. And this is back in like 2012, 2013. So working from home is not kind of the vogue word like it is today. And I used to travel a lot. And when I wasn't traveling, I was home. And so I said to my wife one day, you know what? I'm going to go find an office. I don't know anything about office space. I don't know anything about real estate. I'm not a real estate guy, but how hard can it be, right? I just need an office somewhere to work. I go look at this place and it was just terrible. I mean, it was absolutely terrible. It was like solitary confinement, solid drywall, all four walls. It was a solid wood door. I didn't see a human being the whole time I was in there other than the person selling me this space. So I went home and I said, Linda, I don't know anything about office space, right? But I couldn't do a worse job than these guys. And this woman told me this was the only office that they had available. Like, I think we should do something. So we fleshed this idea out. We're praying about it. And we're still nervous because it's just me and her. I got no family here. I got no money behind me. I got no venture backers. And, you know, this stuff's expensive. And so we kind of hesitated for a little while as we were kind of thinking and praying about it. Because the one thing that I couldn't get my head around is, even if we built something great, would anybody actually pay to come and use it, right? Because I didn't know anything about office space. So I didn't know that executive suites were a thing or any of that. And so one day I was doing an extortion case. I was up in Seattle and I thought, hey, I've got a little bit of downtime. I'm just going to Google like small office space. And I'm Googling it and I find this place. I won't say the name, but it was a co-working company. I'd never even heard the word before. And this is like a year into my idea. So we've been thinking about this for a long time. And we've been praying about, you know, should we do this? It's a lot of risk. Is it going to work? And so I went into this co-working space and it was just awesome. It was everything that I was thinking about. It was big. It felt like a corporate campus. But I remember the one thing that stood out more than anything else. And when I came out, the first thing I did was call Linda. I said, Linda, I just found this office space. I said, there was people inside. And that was the holdup for us. Would people actually come? And so then I quickly Googled Portland because I'm going there next. And so I searched this co-working phrase that I've just found. And I find another one, except it's completely different than the one I saw in Seattle, much smaller, much more kind of low key. But again, there was people in there. And I remember calling and saying, okay, I'm two for two. There's people in both of these places. I think we should do it. Like for me, that was confirmation. You know, it wasn't overly spiritual. It wasn't God's fingers in the sky, but it felt like God was saying, you know what, this is a good idea. And I can prove to you there are people that will pay and go do this. And that was really the catalyst for us to say, okay, we're going to take the risk. And we're going to go for it. And that's not long after that, we went out and, you know, found a space in Houston, signed a lease. My first space, it's about 23,000 square feet. It's got we opened with 117 offices in location number one. Yeah. So, I mean, it was, people thought we were crazy, but we were just convinced that God was in it.
What happened in that number one? You got to tell us before Bob.
Yes, no, it's still there. It's my favorite one. I've only got two of them and that's still the one I like more. So I'm sitting in number two right now. We opened this one a couple of years later. This one's got about 100 offices in it, so it's just a whisker smaller. And it's been great. It's been a good business for us. It's opened up a lot of opportunity. And for us, it's been a great vehicle that's let us, you know, fund some of these impact projects that we've wanted to be able to do. So, you know, we built children homes in India. We built water wells for thousands of people in Cambodia. You know, we've done projects in different countries around the world. Here in Houston, our nonprofit has a feeding program. And I don't know how many years now we're in it, 10, 11 or something like that. But I think we've given away, at last count, about $11 or $12 million worth of food to families in need here over the years. Wow. You know, we've got some great partners that help us with that. It's not Mike standing there with grocery bags, but it's just been awesome. And all of those things happened because we took the risk here. And I think because we were cautiously prayerful about it and didn't just rush in and make a bad decision.
Wow. Yeah, I love what you said about being cautiously prayerful. And as you describe yourself as an adventurous entrepreneur, talk to our listeners, give them some wisdom, our listeners and viewers, about what does that mean? Like, what does it mean to take a risk with God?
Yeah, I think for me, you know, I don't have this figured out, right? Like, I wish I did, but I really don't. Life is still very, very complicated. But the way that we've kind of viewed it is, what I've noticed in my life is I never really feel like God's speaking, but sometimes, and it's not been very often, but this is one of those times when we started this business, it's just this quiet nudge that says, hey, what if? Like, just what if? And so Nashville was another one. I woke up one day and we joked about it here and there, you know, because Houston gets hurricanes and storms and whatever else. And sometimes I joke and say, Lynn, do we really want to live our whole lives here? We've never lived anywhere else in America. Maybe we should try something. And it was just a yeah, but no, you know, thanks. And so one day I woke up and said, babe, like, what if we tried Nashville? Like, what if we worked there years ago when we were kids in college, spent 3 months with Teen Challenge out there, had a blast, loved it. And that's the only thing we knew of it. We'd never been back. And it just seemed crazy because the business is here, the kids are here and all that kind of stuff. But it was just one of those what ifs. And so, you know, through a sequence of events, you know, we find ourselves out there in Nashville and, you know, we're house shopping with the kids and this house that just went viral like a day earlier and burnt down. And, you know, it was a pretty big deal. So we ended up buying it like literally within an hour of seeing it. And, and then that kind of took off. And so, you know, we.
You bought a house that burned down?
Yeah. So it's a pretty special house. It was $1.5 million after it burned down. So it was, it's a house. Yeah. Yeah. If anybody wants to buy it, it's for sale right now. I'm just saying.
Is it still burned down?
It's not burned down and it's not $1.5 million. So let's just put that out there. But I think through that journey of taking risk, and I haven't got it right every time, right? I've got some big fails too. You know, we made a boo-boo. COVID wasn't as helpful as it could have been to me with some expansion that we were doing. And so we lost an awful lot of money and an awful lot of sleep for a few years, you know, with that one. And I felt like God was in it as well. And so that's why I've always been really cautious about, I believe in spiritual things. I believe that God can speak. I believe in the prophetic, but I also believe that Mike sometimes can't be trusted. And so I really want to be careful with that. You know, we've been really cautious to have other people around us that will pray things through with us as well, because when you're taking a risk, and especially when it's a big risk and it's going to affect your life in a meaningful way, you know, if you get it wrong, for me, I just want to be, you can never be 100% sure, else it wouldn't be faith. But I really want to make sure if I've got wise counsel around me that's also praying and saying, hey, we feel that God's in this too. I don't know what else I can do, right? At that point, Lord, I'm like, I'm trying to be careful. Like, and we still pray. So this day we're doing another crazy house now in the UK. And we've got some snags that have come up. And so I'm not even sure if it's going to go through or not. And we still pray and just hold it up with open hands and say, okay, God, like, I think you're in this. We've been working on this for months. Like, we've already wired the money. But if this snag is from you, hey, stop it. It's okay. Like, I'm not so gung-ho for anything that I want to be outside of your will. And that's the way we've kind of approached it. But one thing I think I would add for people listening, as I've noticed in my life, progressing through life, I mean, look, I was on food stamps in 2010, right? So, you know, we've seen both ends of the spectrum here. As we've seen more success and life's maybe got a little bit more comfortable for us, what I found for me is those faith steps have gotten a little crazier and a little bit bigger. Mm-hmm. I think it's the nature of the tension that when you see a little bit more success, it has to be a bigger step or else it's not really a faith step anymore, right? You know, I don't worry about, am I going to have food on my plate to eat tonight when I get home? And I know some people do, and I understand that. And so their faith step looks a little bit different. So for people listening, I think I just want to encourage them wherever they are in that journey. You know, don't be ashamed if your faith steps are small steps. That's great for where you're at right now. And if you're on the other end of the spectrum, you know, don't be so scared if they're big steps, because I kind of think that's the natural ebb and flow of the life cycle.
No, I love that. I think even when I listen to you, it's just, you know, everybody who in the whole world has tension and when they're building something. But as Christians, we have an added divine tension because we're trying to do it with the Lord and trying to put our ear to the ground and really listen to him. And it, to me, it creates less stress because you're more dependent on God. But at the same time, it's still tension. And I think you described some things really beautifully there. Talk about this house project, because the first one, because you guys really thought this was going to turn into, it's one of those points of tension. You guys really thought this was going to turn into potentially like a whole TV project. And you did this out of a place of faith. So you buy a burned down, dilapidated house. What happened?
Yeah. So Wednesday morning, Linda gets an email on Zillow that says, hey, new houses on the market today. We're flying on Friday morning and we already have 2 days scheduled to go look at houses. In the list of houses is this house. It's literally, the picture is the house on fire. That's the listing photo. And so she sends it to me and says, hey, what do you think? And I said, well, it says we could reuse the basement. You know, we can take a look. I mean, we're going to be there anyway. And so I send it to the agent and he sets it all up. Actually, I'm wrong. It was Thursday we were flying out. So Thursday we go house shopping in one side of Nashville. And then Friday we were doing the Franklin area, which is where this was. Well, Thursday afternoon, this thing goes viral online. Like Zillow gone wild, you know, 500,000 views in a day, like the whole thing. So wow. Friday morning comes around and I call my agent and I say, listen, you've got this thing last on the list. I think we need to go see it first because it just blew up online and, you know, we need to hustle. So we get out there and the owner himself is there to show it. And he says, oh, you know, someone else is coming. I'm going to show two of you at the same time. And I'm thinking, oh, you know, I thought we were going to get something for a bargain here. This is just going from bad to worse. And then he starts telling us he's already turned down like four offers. Someone's flying in from out of state tonight. And I'm thinking, holy moly, what is going on, you know? And so we go look at it, you know, and we kind of talk for a little while. And so then I start negotiating. And by this point, his price is going up. And I'm thinking it should be going down, you know, but he's feeling pretty confident because everyone's looking at it. So we end up signing, we end up buying it. And because it was so popular, literally like the next week and a half, I do like 53 interviews with media around the world. I mean, it just went crazy. We had 8 TV production companies reach out who wanted to try and turn this into a show. And so we thought, okay, this sounds like it could be fun. And so we narrowed it down to 3. 2 of them were pretty big. 1 of them was a little bit smaller. And they were the ones that had a Christian founder and had the God aspect. And so we talked about it. We prayed about it. And we even had somebody, you know, speak into our situation prophetically. And we thought that meant the way that they talked and the way that we viewed everything, we understood it to mean we should go with the spiritual one, right? The God one. And so we, you know, we signed a contract with them and everything went wrong from that point. Oh. So one contract turned into, well, here's another one and it's completely different. And basically if you don't sign this, nothing's going to happen. And if you do sign it, you know, we own half the rights and we own this and we own this. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, look, I might not know media, but I know business and this isn't how you do business. Like, right. This is not what you do. We agreed to this. I'm not agreeing to this. And so, you know, it was really frustrating for us. You know, we had to spend a lot of money, get a media lawyer involved and, you know, undo those things. And obviously by that point, we've told everybody else no. So now, you know, you try and reopen those conversations and that's just not going to happen. But we think the story was interesting enough that it probably should have. And it was a real kind of frustration point for us. I think it was, you know, obviously a learning opportunity for us. And I should have known better because, you know, with the life experience that we've had here, I've made the mistake more than once where I've relied too heavily on, well, hey, these guys are Christians. This is going to work out. And unfortunately, not everyone that says they're a Christian necessarily has the same Christian values and you know, and ideologies that we have, right? And so I think if I'd have looked at it more analytically and taken the God card out, that wasn't the ones we would have signed with. We would have signed with somebody else.
That's so powerful. That's so powerful. Well, again, I obviously it's for the future too. I mean, you learned something kind of a once and for all probably on this. I think we go through these things. And I love that you shared it because it's something that didn't get resolved, but it's something that you learned so much from. And I think the good thing for us is we're learning all the way to the end of our life.
Right.
And who knows how this is going to pay dividends in a future project or a future thing, especially because you were new to media. I work a lot with the entertainment industry and media people. And so I'll have people who will call me and I'll do a little bit of consulting here and there. And they'll call me and they'll say, oh, we got the perfect script writer for a script that, from a story we're doing. And you got to read this. I'm like, tell me about the script writer. And I'll like IMDb. I mean, they're not on IMDb, but they're asking for $350,000 for the script, which an average script for what they're doing would be $10,000 or maybe $20,000. I'm like, where'd you find this person? Oh, God totally let us. They put the God card on it. Yeah. I'm like, can I take the God card off? Because they don't have any other scripts for you to see and they don't have anything else they're showing. And they're like 10 times the amount of it anybody else. I'm really worried for you. Like, I'm really nervous about this. And I've had people who've gone in that direction and did the God card, people who didn't. And it's so funny how many times there's a, in newer industries or tech industries or creative industries, there's unrealistic expectations that's built into the atmosphere of it many times, especially with people who are Christians. And so I love that you've learned this, because who knows how this will pay dividends, like I said, in the future. And I think people listening will also learn from it.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, I've been in business so over 45 years, and every story I have about hiring someone or partnering with someone because they're a Christian ends like yours.
Yeah. So, I love those stories.
But I wanted to conclude this interview. We've got 2 or 3 minutes left with, talk to us about, you know, miracles that have happened in your life, that your co-working business, whatever comes to mind, to encourage our listeners that, like, when you follow through, when you listen to the Lord, when you listen to the people God's put around you, these kind of things happen.
Yeah, you know, there's definitely been, you know, places in life that have stood out quite a lot. I think one of the ones that I haven't really talked a whole lot about, when we lived in America for the first time, it was 2001. My wife and I had been married a few years, and we were youth pastors down in South Houston. And we moved back to England when my wife was pregnant. It didn't make a lot of sense, because we always felt we were called here. And, you know, we were serving in a church, and the pastors were awesome. They're still to this day are. We call them our American parents. They live in Dallas now. We still hang out and talk and everything else. The kids are like, you know, brothers and sisters-in-laws. And it didn't make a lot of sense, but we just had this feeling of, probably time to go back to England. And so when we moved back, my wife was about 6 months pregnant. And when my oldest son was born, he was born with a very rare medical condition. And so, you know, as we look back on it now, it sounds crazy to say, because I believe in a God that can heal. You know, I believe the Bible's true. I believe Jesus is real. And yet I look back at it and think, if we'd have had him here with no real immediate family support, like people who've loved us for our entire lives, and, you know, in a medical system that's very different here, obviously it's nationalized there, and there was an awful lot of medical stuff. I mean, they told us he wouldn't speak. They told us he wouldn't sit up. Wow. And, you know, a lot of other kind of crazy things. And he actually films content with me now, and we get to work together sometimes. And so it's just been really fun for me to see his life grow, you know, and him become a young adult now from such a difficult start. And I know that might not be the miracle some people want to hear, but it was, because he's still here, right? And he made it when they said that he wouldn't. So for us, it was a very interesting time of life, because we wrestled with that. Hey, God, we went and served. We gave everything up. I walked away from a business in England to go and be a youth pastor for nothing. And like, why is my child being born with, you know, with difficulties? But of course, we all know that's not how it works. So
that's awesome. Well, tell us about your book, Mic Drop, that just came out just a little while ago. And tell us about how people can get a hold of it.
Yeah, so you can find it on Amazon. You know, the idea was, hey, we built this little business here in Houston, and we built this model around it of funding the mission and kingdom work. And over time, as I've gotten a little bit more theological in my thinking, I started to think, okay, what if this was a bigger plan? Like, what if God's design was actually for entrepreneurship and business to be the vehicle that touches the world? What if it wasn't professional ministry or your organized religion? And so I started to look through scripture, and, you know, right from Genesis, you start to see this thread all the way through of entrepreneurial principles, you know, God acting like an entrepreneur. Obviously, Israel was blessed through Solomon more than anybody else. And clearly he was a successful entrepreneur. Paul in the marketplace, you know, he could have written much more that would have become more New Testament, but he gave that time up to go work in the marketplace, be around people, and, you know, and touch the world as a result of it. And so the book really pulls this thread through, and it encourages and challenges Christian entrepreneurs to think differently about their business. Think of it in terms of, hey, this is for kingdom benefit, not for Mike's benefit. And if that's the case, what does that look like? Mm.
Well, it's been such a privilege having you on. We love your story. How do people get a hold of you?
You can find me online, mikethacker.com or @realmikethacker on all the usual channels, and you'll find me. Or just search Burn Down Mansion. I'll come up for that too.
We want to search directly. Now, if they have to search indirectly for any of us, they may not like what they find. So, Mike, thank you so much for being on today, and we so enjoyed it. And for those of you who are watching or listening, we want to encourage you guys to visit us at bowlsministries.com and click on, if you have a question, you can be entered into the question of the week, where Bob and I get to answer whatever the question is you have. So we'd love to hear from you, and we will see you next time on Exploring the Marketplace. Well, that's the end of another Exploring the Marketplace podcast, where we bring everyday people who are seeing their faith affect their career in powerful ways. Make sure to hit like on this video, hit the subscribe button and notifications so you don't miss an episode. Also, I want to hear from you. So let's talk in the comment section. See you next time.